This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, you might as well call today's program Field to Field, because that's where I am in rural Johnson County, just south of Iowa City. I'm with Jim Slodek, and he and his wife Kathy own a farm down here in rural Johnson County. They also farm not only their land, but the land of a number of landowners in the area. And Jim has graciously offered to let me ride along on his John Deere tractor, really a small mountain of a tractor that I'm about to climb aboard to accompany him during this planting season 2014, to get some of his perspectives on what it's like to be a farmer here in Iowa in 2014, the challenges, and some views on agriculture policy. We'll find out about what's going on during this hour. So I'm about to climb up. Let me find my way to the climbing up the stairs here. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
Jim and I are sitting in, let's see, you'll have to tell me what kind of tractor. This is quite an amazing thing. You've probably got five screens. Go ahead and do what you need to do, but if you could, tell me what we're doing. We're pulling out of the lot here at JCS Family Farms. We have a video screen of, go ahead and tell me what you've got here on all your screens, Jim.
Well, this is our planter tractor. One of our three tractors we've got planting corn now. We've got quite a bit of technology in here that some days is smarter than I am.
What are we seeing on those screens?
Well, we've got a series of monitors that monitor all the functions of the planter so that we can make sure that it's functioning properly. We're doing a lot of things with this planter. We're putting seed down, we're putting fertilizer down, and in some cases we're putting insecticide down. And so we need to monitor all those systems and document what we've applied and where, and then it gets sent to the cloud and is wired back, or is sent back to our office, so that we can keep track of inventories and also progress, planning progress.
So where are we headed today in particular?
We are headed to one of the farms that we farm southeast of Iowa City, and we're going to be there today for a couple hours, and then we'll be moving around. We've actually probably got four different farms we're going to be on here at different parts of the day. This time of year, every hour is worth I don't know how many thousands of dollars, but it's the most critical time of year for us. When you plant corn, you have a window of opportunity to plant it correctly and timely for a maximum yield potential. And if you miss that window, your potential starts to drop slowly at first and then fairly rapidly later in the year. And so getting the crop planted timely and correctly is the most important economic event of the year for us. And so all of our team is focused on getting that job accomplished. And with the weather we've had this spring, we're getting a start towards the end of the window rather than the beginning, which we can't control.
So it's May 7th. We had quite a bit of moisture, quite a bit of precipitation. In previous weeks, we've just had precipitation stop more or less or tail off here in the last couple of days, which allows you to get out in the fields. And so overall, what do you have to accomplish in the next few days and by when?
Well, we're going to try and get 1,000 acres a day until we get done, and we're just getting started. And it looks like the forecast is not exactly favorable either, so we're going to have today to plant. And then it sounds like there's going to be a pretty major event come through tonight and tomorrow. And so we'll just have to see.
Okay. So this is meaning for you and your crew at JCS Family Farms. How many hours a day are you working now the next few days?
We'll work probably 18-hour days until we get done. When we're not in the field, we're hauling grain. We store the majority of our grain on the farm. And we have contracts with Quaker Oats and Cargill and Penford and Cedar Rapids. And so we're delivering on those contracts on a daily basis. So we've, between that and equipment repair and preparations for this time of year, we spend 6 months getting ready for this two-week period.
Jim, let's talk a little bit about the specific type of corn that you're planting here, because this is, I think, most of your fields you're planting with continuous corn on corn year after year.
Yeah, that's correct. We do raise a few non-GMO beans for Cargill for export in Cedar Rapids. but the majority of our acres are in specialty corn. We have contracts with Quaker Oats and Penford and Cargill, and all three in Cedar Rapids, and we raise a combination of white corn for Quaker and waxy starch corn for both Cargill and Penford, which is used in the processing market.
So the end user here, does this find its way to humans or animals or where?
Yes. The white corn is used by Quaker Oats to make grits and Captain Crunch berries. They actually, the majority of the Captain Crunch is made out of yellow corn, but they found that the crunch berries are easier to get purple if they start with white corn and dye the white corn. So if you eat Captain Crunch cereal, you're eating some of our corn probably. And then the waxy corn is used largely for food products. Waxy corn has a different type of starch and is used in food mixes like as a thickener in bakery products and gravy and salad dressings and a number of different food products. So,
all consumed here in the U.S. or some of it get exported?
Both. It would, some of that would be exported also.
We typically think of rotating crops being a good thing, planting corn one year and maybe soybeans the next year, better for the soil and better for conservation, but you're putting corn on corn year after year. Why?
I would say there are some advantages to crop rotation, but they are not based off environmental issues. If you raise corn, you're going to produce more residue, which enhances the organic matter and protects the soil. So raising all corn is an environmental benefit when it comes to soil conservation. If you strip till or no-till, if you do full-width tillage, that may be a different story. But, the state of Iowa, we've lost half our topsoil in 150 years, and it's not because we raised corn. It's because how we've raised corn. And when the system we're using is building organic matter and reducing soil erosion, which is obviously a good thing. Agriculture's biggest environmental issue is soil erosion, because when you lose the soil, you also lose the nutrients that are attached to it. So, there's a saying, if you don't want the soil to move, don't move the soil. And so I guess we're, for 30 years we've done that. And when you raise soybeans, they do not produce near as much residue and are actually more erosive than corn. And so I think that's somewhat of a misnomer to think that it's an environmental benefit. There are agronomic advantages to rotation, but I would say they're not so much from an environmental standpoint.
If you've just joined us, my guest this hour, actually, I'm the guest of Jim Sladek, and I'm in his John Deere tractor pulling a planter. We're getting Jim's perspective as a farmer in rural Johnson County as he sets out to plant several hundred acres of corn.
Yes, we're going to be planting corn today.
Okay, we're just about to start the planting.
I'm programming the auto steer. I'm finding the right AB line that we save in the program that will steer the tractor and for guidance.
So the planter behind our tractor has unfolded. It's about how wide is this planter?
60 feet.
So it looks like an aircraft wing about got behind us. Getting ready to plow this 61-acre field, lining up.
Look good to you?
That wouldn't mean much, but it does, in fact, look fantastic.
We're going to hope this works. Seeing how it's live. Okay. We're off.
So I look behind me and I see this 60-foot long planter behind us with some tanks on the back. What is actually happening in the ground where the planter meets the ground? What is the process?
The process is there's a series of there's two disc openers that make a V trench, and the seed meter then accurately meters the seed and drops it in that seed trench. And then there's a tube that drops fertilizer on the seed, and then there's press wheels that close that trench and a drag chain that level out. And we're very concerned about that being done extremely accurately, because corn is very sensitive to spacing. And so we're trying to get that, I guess we call it a picket fence, very uniform standard deviation means more bushels per acre.
So tell us a little bit, is this what is called no-till planting?
Well, this would be a version of no-till. It's not strictly no-till because we're making that black strip of soil. When we used to be 50-50 corn and soybeans and rotated, like you mentioned, we were 100% no-till. The problem is when you plant corn on corn, that previous residue is toxic to that corn seedling. There's a liliopathic effect. And so we have to make that black strip of soil so that it dries out, warms up, and avoids the residue issue for corn. So we're only tilling a strip that's about 6 inches wide, and the rest of the field is no-till. So it is considered a no-till practice.
We hear many reports about, and you've just said it, soil conservation is a big part of what you consider when you plant here. When we're planting this way, how well are we conserving the soil?
Well, soil erosion is the biggest environmental issue that farmers face, and that's the reason, you know, that in Iowa, I think we've lost half of our topsoil in 150 years, and it's not because we raised corn, it's because of how we've raised corn. And so today's practices are much more conservation-minded. You can never completely eliminate erosion. Our goal is to reduce it to what they call the T level, which is the rate that it's being built so that we're not at a net loss of soil.
Agronomists say, most recently, an ISU agronomy professor, Rick Cruz, says we are literally washing billions of dollars of yields down our streams and rivers.
I would not disagree with that comment. And if you look at the other environmental issues of agriculture as far as nutrient runoff and nutrient pollution, the majority of those issues are also tied to soil erosion because most of the nutrients, with the exception of nitrogen, are attached to the soil particles. So if the phosphorus issue, if you stop the soil from moving, you stop the phosphorus pollution also. So to me, soil erosion is the biggest concern. The reason we're doing this practice is, for me, it's a win-win. We think it's the best environmentally, but at the same time, from an economical standpoint, we're making many fewer trips across the field. It's much more economical, in my opinion.
Okay, so you just came to the end of this row, and the tractor and the planter is turned around. What are your thoughts right now in getting this right?
We don't. There's a program that will completely auto steer the corners too. We do not use that, so I guess at some point I'd be pretty much obsolete here in the cab. And that's, to be honest, we're headed toward robotic equipment and driverless equipment. That's in the near future. But today we're turning on the ends. We push the resume button, and the auto steer takes over, and away we go. And I just, you know, with the distraction today, I'm just going to say that if this field, if there's any issues with my planting performance, we're going to blame the reporter here. So
we're going to blame Iowa Public Radio.
No, I think the fact that I can actually be doing an interview while I'm planting corn, I think is a testament to the technology. Look up here on the screen. This is also
looking up on the screen. Yes,
the iPad has a coverage map that actually shows the areas that we have planted, and not only the areas, it's showing the individual skips wherever there's a skip with the planting with the seed, or wherever there's a double, it's indicating that, and so that we can visually see the performance and the quality of the job we're doing planting.
I wonder, in talking about soil erosion, Jim, how much progress have you seen in soil conservation in your lifetime since being a boy growing up on this farm?
It's been dramatic. You know, back in my dad's and my grandfather's generation, when I came back even to start farming, the majority of the acres in Iowa were moldboard plowed, and you've seen a huge reduction. There's very little plowing done anymore. There's a lot more conservation tillage done, and that has dramatically reduced the amount of erosion that you're seeing. I mean, there's still improvement to be made, but it's been dramatic how much has already been made.
How many farms are like this in that they're very close to no-till and doing a good job of conserving the soil? Do you have an idea statewide or in the Midwest how that is measured?
I guess I don't have a good number for you, but it's a fairly low percent. No-till is probably, it's less than 25% that's straight no-till. But the majority of the conventional acres that you would call conventional are in a minimum till situation that is still a vast improvement from previous practices.
Explain a little bit for those of us who are not farmers why moving less of the soil, tilling less, conserves soil.
If you took two loaves of bread and you put them in the oven and you dried them till they were 100%, you know, the moisture was zero, and then you took the one loaf and put it in a food processor and ground it up. Now, chemically, you've got the same product before and after. The difference between before and after is structure. And then if you take and pour water, if you take and put the ground up loaf in a bowl, a dish, and pour water on it, what happens? It turns into concrete.
Turns into mush.
And if you take and pour water over the loaf of bread, it soaks it up like a sponge. Now, when you till the soil, you do the same thing as grinding up the loaf of bread in a food processor. In other words, the soil structure of the soil that we farm today was never any better than the first day it was plowed. You know, Mother Nature created the soil not by plowing it every year and turning it upside down. It was created by the residue breaking down on the surface, which is an aerobic process. Organic matter formation is aerobic. When you bury it, it breaks down to carbon dioxide and does not create organic matter. So when you go to no-till and leave the residue on the surface to break down, you are somewhat duplicating Mother Nature's process for how the soil was formed. And the longer you no-till, the better the soil structure becomes. The challenge is when you go from one system to the next, there's a 2-3-4 year transition period where you have to be creative to survive that transition, because the ground will get hard before that structure repairs itself.
No, one of the focuses of your latest newsletter is the future of farming, the future of drones. You've purchased, JCS Family Farms has purchased its first drone just recently.
Yeah, my son's trying to figure out how to make that a economical decision rather than just a, boy, that's a neat toy decision. But in the future, drones are going to have a huge impact on agriculture, and the one we purchased is not the high-end one. I mean, this technology is changing very dramatically. But some of the things you can do today, and not the version we bought, but if the higher-end versions, you can actually program in a path to fly and record infrared images of the whole field and then download those that are geo-referenced to your map of the field, and you could probably make prescription maps based off that to apply variable rate fertilizer or other variable rate practices based off those images in season. So it's pretty exciting, actually.
So you imagine the future of this farm or other farms will be, you'll have a little drone fleet?
That's very possible, and in fact, you may see some of the application being done by drones. I mean, it's, some of the technology I've seen is you're going to be seeing herbicides potentially applied by a drone.
How big is your drone?
Ours is not very big. It's called a quadcopter, and it's probably 3 feet square. It can fly for, I believe, up to half an hour on a battery charge. And right now we've got a GoPro camera we've mounted on it. It's pretty fascinating, the images you can take. One of the things we mentioned earlier, our landowners, we're going to be doing a documentary of our spring planting season with our drone that's going to be focused on flying around the equipment as it's actually applying products to the field. We're going to document the whole year that way and put that together for our Landowner Appreciation Day and have a film that we can show of the process.
If you've just joined us, I'm aboard a tractor belonging to Jim Sladek. He and his wife, Kathy, own and run JCS Family Farms in Johnson County. And Jim has kindly let me ride along on his tractor during spring planting of one field here in rural Johnson County, talking about some issues facing farmers these days and issues facing his particular operation. As we finish up our conversation here, Jim, when we look, we talked about drones in farming. We talked about a lot of issues and concerns, challenges facing agriculture and those who work in it in the future. What are your biggest worries about the future of agriculture in Iowa on this particular farm?
I guess I honestly believe that government regulation is one of our biggest challenges that impedes my business. So that's probably one of my concerns. But I think the future for agriculture is extremely bright. We've got a lot of people to feed. You know, I couldn't be more excited for the next generation coming back. You know, obviously things will cycle. Things will not stay good all the time. But I think the long-term future of agriculture in Iowa is extremely bright.
And I understand you, we mentioned at the outset, you're the fourth generation of Slatic farmers on this land. There is a sixth generation that just showed up 18 months ago?
That's correct. Almost, you'll be two years old here in August. And everybody says there's nothing better than grandkids. I always thought, well, yeah, I'm sure that's true. But when it actually happens, I have to agree, it kind of changes the focus. And I guess to me, this operation, what I'm doing now is not so much about me as it is the next several generations and trying to provide an opportunity for them to do what I love.
Tell us a little bit more about JCS Family Farms. You farm not only acres that you and your wife, Kathy, have, but the acres of many other landowners. How did you arrive at this particular business model? Why does it make sense?
I'm the fourth generation to farm here in Johnson County, and my son that joined our operation a year ago will be the fifth generation. And the reason that we're growing the business is because I want to provide the same opportunity that I was given to farm to my children and grandchildren. And I know for that to be a reality that we need to change our business, because the farming and agriculture is changing dramatically, and it's consolidating dramatically. And so we have made the decision to participate in that and try to provide an opportunity for our for the next generations to continue to do what I enjoy doing.
So this is the path of a family farm if it wants to exist in the future. Is that what I hear?
I think that, in my opinion, yes. And so we are scaling our business in a fairly rapid rate and trying to get a critical mass that will be a sustainable family farm for generations to come.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this hour I'm out in the fields south of Iowa City in Johnson County. I'm riding along on the tractor of Jim Slodek of JCS Family Farms, riding along, getting Jim's perspective as a farmer with a lot of high-tech equipment who is evolving to meet the demands of a changing agricultural industry. Business. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We'll be back in just a moment with more. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, the show might be called Field to Field because I'm out in a field at this moment, sitting aboard a small mountain of a John Deere tractor with Jim Slodek. He and his wife, Kathy, own JCS Family Farms in Johnson County, and I'm riding along for some planting this spring season, and getting a few of Jim's views on various agricultural issues. Jim Slodek, you are a fourth generation farmer here in Iowa. If I'm getting your name right, your family's of Czech origin.
Yes, my ancestors immigrated in the 1870s from the Czech Republic.
So your family has been on this land how long?
We farmed in Johnson County since around 1910 or 15, in that area. The farm I'm on, my grandfather purchased in 1928.
And when we take in this cabin, your tractor cabin here, with all the satellite hookups, all the planting here that is extremely well managed by technology and humans. What would your father, your grandfather, have thought sitting in this cabin if he were sitting where I am?
Well, my dad enjoyed technology, but I think he would be absolutely amazed and astounded. He passed away in 1991, and so, I'm sorry, 1992. But the changes we have seen, you know, in the last 20 years, have been astounding. And you look back to my grandfather's generation. You know, in our office, we've got pictures of my grandparents farming in the 1920s and, you know, using horses. It's pretty dramatic, the changes we've seen.
You have those around your office. We'll put those on our website so that people could have a look at the horse-drawn plows. What does that do for you to work around those images every day?
Well, it makes me question whether I'd want to live in the good old days, I guess. That was a hard way to make a living, and to that point, my father did not want me to farm. I came back in spite of my father's wishes.
Why didn't he want you to farm?
Well, every generation wants their children to have a better way of life, an easier way of life, and he knew that there was easier ways to make a living than farming. And for his career, it was a lot of work, physically, went through the 80s with the farm crisis, and there was a large period of that time when it wasn't profitable. And so in the end, I know he was glad I came back, and obviously, I'm glad I came back, and I made the decision that, I only had one chance to farm. If I gave that up, I wouldn't get a second chance, and I could always take my education and get a job if the farming gig didn't work out. So
this is interesting because we often hear of a different scenario where the father is pushing the son into farming, trying to convince him to do it, and the son is reluctant. But for you, it was the opposite. This is interesting.
It's exactly the opposite, because to do what I do, you have to have a passion to do it, and you can't make somebody do what I do. And to that point, we told our son and our daughter, either one, my son is back now, but we made the requirement that he had to go after college somewhere for 5 years and get some work experience and make sure that he wanted to come back and do this, because, like I mentioned, you have to have a passion to get up every morning and do this. And the fact that I had friends that said, well, what if he doesn't want to come back? What if he goes off and doesn't come back? I said, that's great. I mean, you can't make somebody do this and be successful. And so he's came back. He has the passion, and we're all excited about it, and it's working well.
Jim Slodek, you were recently in Ukraine, of all places. How many weeks ago was that?
It was approximately 3 weeks ago.
What you were invited there because of your farming expertise. Well, how did that happen?
Well, actually, my agronomist was invited by the World Bank because of his expertise, and I tagged along. But
how do their farming practices compare with what you're doing here, which is admittedly higher end farming than we would have in most of Iowa, isn't it?
It was like you were maybe not stepping back to the Stone Age, but it was quite a change. I think the biggest challenge is their mentality more so than the equipment or the technology. They have access to the same equipment that we have. Their challenge is the mentality that's been basically beaten into those people for 200 years by the Russians and the collective farming system. And it's going to take a generation, I think, for the entrepreneurial spirit of those people to come out and to be able to succeed. I mean, it's the thing that was exciting to me is the resource over there is phenomenal. Ukraine has 30%, almost a third of the black dirt in the entire world. And it's just amazing to me that they could be as far behind with that kind of a resource. And it's just a testament to what that political system has done and how it's held those people back. I mean, it goes all the way back, well, I'm not sure how far back, but clearly, Stalin starved 7 million Ukrainians. And it's just when you look at the resource, it's hard to believe that those people are as far behind as they are.
So what were you telling them? What was your value in talking to them? What did they get from you?
Well, the World Bank wants us to bring the highest technology we have when it comes to farming. And the problem is when you get over there, you realize that you're not trying to take one step, you're trying to go from step A to step Z all in one. And so I don't think that's practical. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be fixed. In other words, farming with satellites is not their limiting factor. I mean, there's a lot more basic things that need to be corrected. And it's going to be a process. One example is we were trying to find out what variety of seed corn they were planting because, they have access to the same genetics that we do from Monsanto and Pioneer. And so we're trying to make recommendations on agronomic recommendations based off the variety. And it comes back that the variety they're going to plant is they're going to take corn out of the bin and plant last year's production, which, if you know anything about corn production, is that if you don't replant the same seed. Obviously, we're planting very high-tech hybrid seed. And this was a 600,000 acre farm, so this it was publicly traded. So we're not talking about small. These are huge operations, and so I mean that's just one example of the difference in mentality.